I'm Bill Klinger, session chair here this morning. Our first speaker is Dietrich Schuller. He comes to us from Vienna, Austria, where he had a distinguished 50-year career at the Phonogram Archive, the world's oldest audiovisual archive. He retired as director in 2008. But earlier, he was very active in the International Association for Sound and Audiovisual Archives, IASA. And with IASA, he was editor of an important technical document, IASA TCO3, which is now available in 8 languages, including Russian and Chinese. Back in 1990, at the Joint Technical Symposium, Dietrich caused a small uproar when he stated that it is useless to attempt to preserve the carrier. That is nearly impossible, so we must preserve the content. Perhaps today we'll have a little less ruckus when Dietrich tells us about magnetic tape.
Thank you, Bill, for your kind introduction. Well, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to address you. This is my first ARSC solo conference. I have attended several ARSC conferences, but always when they were in conjunction with IASA. And as I be here on a private tour, actually, it is a specific pleasure to attend this meeting, which I had, and I have heard so many challenging papers. Today, I'm talking about to you on magnetic stability on interviews I have made with representatives of former tape manufacturers. These interviews have been part of a project which was called Kur Ilka, which has been carried out by the National Museums Berlin and by two departments, by two entities of these National Museums in Berlin, the Department of Ethnomusicology of the Ethnological Museum, better known as the Berlin Phonogram Archiv, perhaps one of the greatest collection of cylinders, of ethnographic cylinders produced in the early times of phonography, and the partner in the chemical analysis is or was the Rutgen Research Laboratory. This research has been funded by the Federal Cultural Foundations and the Cultural Foundations of German State. So the project aims were cylinder production, specifically the 16,000 copper negatives the Berlin Phonogram Archiv has of their cylinder positives. Yes, this is a very unique technology which they have introduced and which actually is the basis that most of these materials have survived to date. The second part of this Kur Ilka project was tape stability, tape deterioration, and recovery. Now, I was consultant to this project, but my consultation predominantly concentrates on the initiative to interview former experts of tape manufacturers, Agfa and BASF, as these, as you can see from the little history, which I'm not going to read out in detail, these both companies have stopped their tape production in 2004, and there is no legal successor of them. So the people were able to talk about the secrets which they never have disclosed as long as these tapes have been produced. May I say at that point that the issue is the deterioration of modern tapes, not of old tapes. Generally, and I guess this is also a reaction to the paper we have yesterday heard by Louis Bijoudin, we have to distinguish between two groups of tapes when we talk about tape deterioration. The one are the historical tapes, acetate cellulose tapes, where the base film is the problem. And the other, I should set perhaps a dividing timeline by 1970 around, are the modern tapes where the binder pigment layer is the problem and not the base film, which is generally PET polyester and which has not been given much headache to any of us. I should also say that the general issue, the general interest of these interviews was SSS, sticky shed syndrome, which was generally ascribed, or is generally ascribed, to hydrolysis of polyurethane binder. Okay, so this is the pre-knowledge which we went into this interview. Now, my presentation here is a report on the information given by the interviewees in italics. So it's not my opinion. I report what these experts reported. My own strategic conclusions from what they have said is in the last slides in upright script. Yeah, and I should say that my summary is not necessarily in fully congruent with the summary my colleagues from Berlin, from the Kurilka project, would make. This is not a discrepancy, but I just, because they have not published yet their results, so I will leave this open, and my, as I'm not a chemist, my personal opinion is rather a strategic one. Okay, the interviews took place on the 13th of May, almost a year ago, in Munich. This was the first one, and involved Werner Sinkhoff and Rudolf Müller. Some of you veterans may remember Rudolf Müller. He was part of the AES subcommittee on preservation and audio restoration in the late 1980s. They were engaged in professional customer service, as many other personalities in this part of the world, like Fred Lane or Delilah's, were for their respective companies. Some of you may remember these colleagues. In the party also was Klaus Köppe, who was a tape tester in development, and also he was the man who recovered those tapes who have been problematic. They all have worked at the Munich plant, which has been continued even after the merger between BASF and Agfa, and their predominant expertise is professional audio tapes. In October last year, we made an interview in Berlin with Wolf Münzner. He was engaged as an electronic engineer. He was not a chemist, but he has a lot of chemical knowledge in the BASF videotape development section, and his predominant experience, therefore, is videotapes. The interviewers were Elena Gomez-Sanchez, a chemist working for Röntgen, Simon Kunz, a conservator, also working for Röntgen, in Berlin only, Katrin Abromeit, and myself. A list of questions, mainly concentrating on SSS and the possible treatment of SSS tapes, affected tapes, was sent to the interviewees in advance. The interviews in Munich lasted for 4 hours, in Berlin for 6 hours. They have been minuted by me, not transcribed, but minuted, and partly amended by additional information in a second email context by the interviewees. One interview is already published, the Munich interview. The other one is too complex and this awaits for publishing, and also the abstracts of both interviews are published in English language. I should perhaps say that the interviews have been carried out in German language. Now, let me report on the Sikishet syndrome and possible reasons as seen out of the perspective from the ACFA experts. They ascribe this phenomenon mainly to the binder insufficiency. Sometimes the word hydrolysis was also used, and it always, with their tapes, they claim that it has been in association with a too high pigment concentration, and that mainly affected PM469, a tape, a master tape, very popular in the United States, and this may have given also ACFA tapes a, yes, and not the best reputation. This prevailed until batch number 8, until H841, and then they changed the binder, and then the problem was solved. The most interesting detail, which was reported by Klaus Köppe in this interview, was that always those tapes that had surface damages from ill-maintained machines, yeah, were much more affected by SSS than those tapes that had no damages on the on the surface. So they explain that the surface is specifically hard, and it is a barrier against the vice, against water, against hydrolysis, and as long as the surface is in good shape, even 469 tapes were much less critical than those tapes that have been used at a library for the blind, where the tape tape machine maintenance was not too professional. You know? They also quoted a second problem, which is lubricant exudation. This was specifically experienced around 1988. I remember we have been discussing this at the LAES convention that year, and occurred on PM468 tapes. But this was lubricant exudation as a result of a change of the recipe. I will come later to that. This was only a contemporary problem which has been solved very quickly. Now the point of view of BASF, and this is most interesting. BASF said they have observed all their problems of their own tapes and of tapes of other manufacturer. But hydrolysis of binder was never observed on any BASF tapes. This was very astonishing for us. So they said, this is not our story. But they offered a bundle of other explanations. Primer exudation. Now, not everybody may be acquainted. The tapes have a primer between the substrate and the back matting, you see, and also the pigment
binder layer, which in the case of BSF, I can only speak for them, was a 0.1 micrometer layer of PVC. And if there was too much primer, this exudated through the back matting of the audio tapes on the video tapes, and this caused SSS. They also said that superfluous dispersion agent may be the reason. I come to the production process in a few slides. Also lubricant exudation, specifically as result of low temperatures, was mentioned. This coincides with the ACFA phenomenon of PM468. And insufficiently, and this is very interesting, insufficiently cross-linked binder components in the later days of video consumer tape production, they employed production speeds up to 1,000 meters. Yes, up to 1,000 meters, but not per seconds. I'm sorry, this is a misprint. Sorry, per minute. Sorry, please don't write this at this. Thousand per minute, 1,000 seconds per minute. Would be ultra speed, would be supersonic speed. Yeah, and this called for the cross-linking of the binder components on the surface of the tape, okay, during the coating process. And if they spread, you see, off the both components were irregular, yeah, then sticky areas were left behind. And also one very interesting information was, even if they had a specific problem with a 1-inch videotape made for the C format. Normally, for C formats, they used the B format for the German B format from Bosch, you see. And they used chromium dioxide. Yeah? While for the C format tapes, they used the Fe304 iron pigments. Now, using the same binders for both pigments resulted in different behavior, because chromium dioxide is acidic, and iron oxide is alkaline, and this did not match with the binder. So all chemists may now draw their own conclusion from such experiences. Now, most interesting, and this probably relates to the next paper, ACFA and BASF both denied categorically that there is any correlation between SSS and back coating, or to phrase it differently, non-back coated tapes may also be affected by SSS. This has been an experience that comes from the United States, probably from American tape, that SSS is always related to back-coated tape. This was not confirmed by ACFA and BASF people, because these are different tapes. That's it. Yeah. Now, we come to the treatment. ACFA were treating no videotapes. They were treating professional audio tapes, mainly PM 468. They for sticky shed as well. Yeah, that's interesting. for both phenomena, for both reasons, yeah, for sticky shed as well as for lubricant excitation, so for hydrolysis and for lubricant excitation, mechanical cleaning and temperature treatment at 60 centigrade, which is fairly high, for 12 to 24 hours in an incubator or shorter in microwave ovens, according to the watches, wattage. They had grids where they could find out. Okay, thank you. The SSS treatment for BASF was successful for all except the insufficiently cross-linked tapes. Mechanical using agate plates, the temperature treatment was lower because they were afraid that higher temperature would cause problems with videotapes and track geometry. However, it is impossible to treat insufficiently cross-linked tapes. They are resistant to any treatment. And for lubricant excitation, freezing was a method. They froze the tapes and then they removed it with an agate blade. So all treatment only worked for some time. And as the treatment was to rescue the contents, the further behavior of the tapes is unknown. Message of both experts, the chemical recipe is only the basis of success, but per se no guarantee for a longevity or for a quality of the tape. Additional important is the production process, and Münzner, the BASF expert, said 30% is chemistry, 70% is production. And let me have a very quick look at how this process, production process went. You had to grind and to disperse the magnetic pigment in different, this was for different times according to the pigments you used. Binder was adding, then the primer was added to the tape while Agfa bought substrates which had been delivered with the primer. Then came the coating of the pigment binder layer and pre-orientation of magnetic particles. This must not be forgotten, is important for the performance, for electrical performance of the tape, has to occur as long the tape is, the binder is soft enough. Then comes calendaring, and calendaring must, the tape must already be hard enough, and the critical parameters of calendaring are pressure and temperature of the calendar. So this is a multi-parametric process. It needs ultimate precision for a timely harmony in terms of seconds of chemical and physical processes. The high-speed production up to, here we have the right dimension, up to 1,000 meters per minute was developed from 1990 onward, permitted fast and cheap production process, but the inhomogeneous distribution caused sticky tape, and this process, good to hear, was not applied to professional tapes. Now, the production process has been kept more secret than the chemistry because it was more important, and visitors were not allowed in the plants. Visitors of competitors were not allowed in the plants. I skip that. Lubricants and relubrication has been part of several discussion also in art article. Yes, I get it. Lubricants are fatty esters and many other things which you can read, and to determine the point of solidification, which is widespread between 5 and 6 centigrade. Loss of lubricants, I've heard this several times, has never been observed. There's always enough lubricant. The question is lubricant delivery to the surface enough specifically for frame freeze video. This, if this is not enough, it is a result of too hard calendaring, so that closes the pores and does not give the right lubricant. Both expert groups warn from any lubrication from outside. I skip that and come to a second key observation, which causes me to ask you a question. BSF said very clearly, all problems which we had occurred within 2 to 3 years after production and not later. So now comes my conclusion and my question. Yeah? So with modern tapes, I'm not talking about acetate cellulose, which are aging. But are we sure that with modern tapes, we are confronted with an aging problem? Okay, within the times we observe and within a reasonable time ahead of us. And provided, of course, that the tapes have been stored under reasonable condition. I'm not talking about storing tapes in the rainforest, okay? Are we not rather dealing with malproductions or production accidents? And I ask the well-organized archives amongst you, have you ever observed any deterioration many years after the production? Are any tapes deteriorating that have produced after 1995 or something like that? This is deteriorated over time. This aged over time. This is my question. Okay, we know that we have a replay problem, which is often related to production periods and batches. Significant performance difference may occur within the same reel. And if production beyond the chemical composition influences tape's performance, what are we measuring? If we make a chemical analysis, we only measure a potential, but we do not measure the possible influence of the production of this batch or of these tapes. And perhaps we should look more, and we have seen photographs just a couple of minutes ago, would physical surface analysis, scanning, hardness measurement, nanointender, provide additional relevant information? I think it may. Yeah. Okay, I'm come to the last slide, which is my own slide, you see. And I have named it Ultimate Stage of Peak Finder Deterioration. I think this is wrong. I have to withdraw that. This is most likely, I say most likely, a production accident. And this is now my last sentence is, I fully join the view of all of you who yesterday were in that group. Audio can't wait. The real threat is not tape deterioration. The real threat is the lack of replay equipment and the ever smaller time window which we have to replay. So the effort should concentrate on resolving replay problem. This would not go without chemical knowledge and analysis. So chemical analysis is not does not become obsolete, but we should also go into surface analysis. This is a warning. None of the experts' opinions should be extrapolated to Ampex or to any other tapes. You can't even within the same, you cannot extrapolate that. Each product is an individual, and American colleagues are encouraged also to seek experts, chemists have developed the tapes that are now able or willing to speak and to tell you the secrets of the production. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dieter.
Yes, please use the microphone. I have a hearing problem.
You mentioned that it's possible to bake tapes in a microwave oven. Now, if you have tapes that are on aluminum reels, you can't put aluminum reels in a microwave oven.
Yes.
So how do you get them onto plastic reels? You can't run them through a tape transport if they're sticky shed.
No. In this case, you have to use an incubator, you see. But in Europe, normally, these tapes are on plastic reels, and therefore it was no problem.
Could you tell us any of your experience or information about a massive tape, and I think it was PER 528, and I think it was made in the 50s and the 60s, and it had a gray, a pink, or a yellow sort of back coating. It was, to me, a very remarkable tape, and I wondered if you knew anything about it or what your experience with it was.
I'm not quite sure. I'm sorry whether I have understood your question. Sorry for that.
I just wondered about your opinion or experience on BASF PER 528 tape that I think was made in the 50s and 60s.
Yes. I have already said this to Fenella Franz. The PER 528 and PEM 468 are at least the batches that have been sold in Europe, so I'm very cautious, would I say, are the most stable tapes which we have. How they come on the list, I do not know. I simply do not know. There was a problem with ACFA 468, but this was lubricant exudation because of a chemical change. This was around 1988. This has been analyzed, and the recipe has been corrected, and it never occurred again. My institute has used that tape from the very onset to the very end, and we have never ever had any problems. Neither had the German ARD, who has used in millions of meters the PER 528. I do not understand where these rumors come from.
What was the date of manufacture when it started and quit? Do you know?
The date of manufacture of 468 was from 1976 or 1977 onward, and to the very end, in the early 20 zeros, if you call it like that.
Do the people that you interviewed have any recommendations for how the differences in manufacturing may manifest themselves? So, can you examine the tape? Do they know?
No. No, I mean, they have started to think about that. They have done their jobs, none of them have really considered that SSS, or whatever reason it may be, is a major problem, you see. But when we explain this to them and say, gee, a great percentage of the production of cultural documents is on that tape, so even if you have no legal, you have a moral obligation to assist us, then they were very helpful.
I think that'll have to be the last question. Thank you, Dietrich.